So this is about the work for we should load. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. As I briefly mentioned, in WHO, in a number of international fora, about of just slightly before the launching of the new Stop TB strategy, we met a number of people, a number of colleagues and experts that were raising questions about community participation. Mostly because, as you know very well, at least from the declaration of Alma-Ata in 1978, there have been wide attempts, many attempts of involvement of community. And in a way, in each context, a slightly different or very different approach has been followed. So we have conducted a number of country reviews in order to shed some light on precisely the meaning of community involvement and perhaps to understand better what are the most successful or more successful approaches to involvement of communities. These are bullets summarizing the new Stop TB strategy. As you see, there are a number of new challenges that were unknown some 20 years ago and that have been constantly present in the work and the life of people affected by TB and by healthcare workers. But you can see that particularly component 4 and 5 address the approach that might be used to tackle all the other challenges. One may use a public-private partnership approach, for example, to address the challenge of MDR-TB. And one may very usefully use a community involvement approach to provide antiretroviral treatment or to provide support to a person on anti-TB treatment. While it's very helpful not to define involvement but rather to describe what effective involvement is, it is useful instead to define what a community is. And we are proposing, just for working definition of community, as a reality that consists of people living together in some form of social organization and cohesion. It may vary significantly in size and socioeconomic profile, but the important point is that there is a common belonging based on the fact that members share social, cultural, economic characteristics, as well as common interests and values. First conclusion we should draw is that the community is therefore an extremely important social entity which is placed between the individual and the family of this individual and higher forms of social organization, for example, a local or a national government. So in social justice literature, an entity like this is defined as an intermediate social body. What were the expectations, including the community involvement in the Stop TB strategy? First of all, we had already ample evidence of documented positive impact of community-based TB control initiatives in many countries, and of the social value of these initiatives. So there are a number of studies about effectiveness and cost effectiveness of interventions in which communities are involved, and studies about the acceptability of these interventions to people affected by the disease as well as to the health workers. But we should certainly take stock of the fact that the society and the civil society are not sufficiently actively engaged in TB control planning, in implementation and evaluation. And in countries that have taken seriously the challenge of involving communities, one may often observe problems in scaling up quickly enough community-based models and challenges in motivating all levels of what we could call a community-based system. So within the health system and also outside in the community. About involvement, as I said, it may be more helpful to describe the features of successful experience in which people are really actively involved. First of all, people should be taken on board from the start. People should be involved from the outset of an initiative in all the stages of designing an intervention, of implementation, and of evaluation of TB control efforts, including the periodic reviews that will take stock of progress. Secondly, a very important point is that involving community and empowering the community is not simply the last step in the process of decentralization, especially if we think of a vertical process of decentralization. It's rather an horizontal process that goes beyond the boundaries of the health system to establish a partnership with the society. In order to do that, therefore, it's extremely important that there should be a clear definition of roles and responsibilities for all the partners involved. Clearly, communication and social mobilization play a key role, and we know very well in the TB control community how communication and social mobilization have been for a long time somehow neglected. No way we actively involve a community without communicating effectively with the people we want to serve and with the people we want to establish a partnership. This is absolutely necessary. And then another feature is the commitment of all partners to pool resources, follow the guidelines agreed upon. Last but not least, the point of motivation, which is the key issue in terms of sustainability of a community-based intervention. Motivation, we saw, is often solidly rooted in personal and community values. What are these values? These are things that come from interviews administered to people with TB, people with HIV infection or AIDS, and health staff. Community involvement places the dignity of each person at the very center of health services. This is the first and founding value. This value is at the origin not only of rights, but also of responsibilities that the society affirms and accepts, to make progress towards a common good which will benefit all its members. Empowerment, therefore, of people is the fact that people recognize their rights and assume responsibility for their own health, and this empowerment has at least two fundamental dimensions, solidarity and subsidiarity, and I will have to recall here my previous definition of community and intermediate social body. Solidarity, we all know, is a moral responsibility to share needs and problems of others and to recognize and defend the dignity of each individual. We have seen in practice many times, and people have reported that when solidarity is at work, stigma is reduced, discrimination is reduced. But then we have exactly those realities I mentioned before, the family, spontaneous groups, associations, all local realities to which people spontaneously give life. The following presentations will provide a powerful example of that. And they are precisely this reality that enable people to achieve an effective personal and social growth. So the principle of subsidiarity states, is a principle well known in social justice, it states that a higher institution or level of the society should support and promote what a lesser form of social organization can do, and therefore governments should recognize and support as part of the public system other actors that institutionally do not belong to the state, recognizing therefore a public function of private initiative. This means that all actors that are, as a matter of fact, providing care should be taken on board, and first of all, the people who are maybe affected by the disease, either in themselves or in their relatives and friends. This is my final slide. Just to summarize the fact that we are therefore looking at, we have a vision of moving towards a partnership for health between governments, formal healthcare providers, and the society and the community. So the involvement of individuals and communities contributing to the life of the society to which they belong is an essential condition for a subsidiary approach to the delivery of services, and the involvement in activities that contribute to the common good is a right and a responsibility for everyone. Regardless of, of course, outcomes, impact of these initiatives is very important, but we should not forget the fact that this kind of partnership with the society is a benefit per se. There is a value in it that goes beyond the immediate operational return, because it strengthens all the partners and builds a social capital, which is extremely important not only for TB control, for HIV, AIDS control, and for any health initiative, or not only health initiative, that one may take. And finally, these are interventions, therefore, that are designed precisely at the level where problems occur. So the people who are most affected are likely to give us, who provide technical solutions, the right answers on how to deliver this solution and how to deliver them effectively, accessing possibly as many people as possible. Now, my colleague will continue highlighting briefly the main steps that, in a way, we have observed across very different experiences, steps that recur in different initiatives of community involvement.
The first step in the implementation process is setting up a task force with representation of all relevant partners to guide policy and implementation. Advocacy is key for building and maintaining political and financial commitment, ensuring the buy-in of all stakeholders. Communication in this process aims at carefully should be carefully designed and aims at creating awareness about TB and available services. Situational analysis should be followed by the situational analysis of TB delivery, and a discussion also should take place on how the community can complement the tuberculosis program capacity. And it is key for the community to be represented in this process. The next step is identifying interested partners on the ground and discussing the role of each of the stakeholders involved and planning activities jointly. Creating parallel systems should be avoided in areas where existing community initiatives are ongoing. Creating synergies with those existing community initiatives will ensure sustainability of the initiative. The model of involvement of communities in tuberculosis should be designed together with partners and the communities and issues to be addressed include defining clearly the role and responsibility of each partner, ensuring regular contact between the health services and the community, encouraging referral of symptomatic persons, early referral of symptomatic persons, ensuring optimal care and adherence to treatment, addressing motivation within community involvement, addressing differences in the model in urban versus rural settings, and ensuring adequate recording and reporting of community contribution. The points to particularly keep in mind in capacity building ensure securing funds to train facilitators who will promote community involvement at lower levels, as well as conducting workshops. And the training should be based on a task analysis of all people involved, with the help of training material in line with the national guidelines. The implementation plan and scale-up strategy should be prepared, and experiences in demonstration areas and the model connected to experiences in demonstration areas should be fine-tuned. And the accompanying budgets should include both startup and recurrent costs. Then the initiative should be launched with the participation of national and local authorities, which will gain public and political support for the initiative, and is useful for sharing information and creating demand for community-based services. Finally, lessons learned in demonstration areas should guide the improvements in the model for countrywide implementation. Regular evaluation and impact on quality of care will provide the information necessary to maintain community involvement in tuberculosis. What is the role of the World Health Organization in all of this? Well, facilitation of partners' efforts towards a partnership approach, influencing policy informed by country experience and specific recommendations, promoting partnership approach in regional meetings, national TB managers meetings, and international fora, catalyzing mobilization of resources, ensuring that the policies are implemented, and coordinating technical assistance with partners. Thank you.
Thank you, Lana. Of course, we have time later on for questions on these presentations. We move immediately to the second presentation, which comes from a group of people that some of whom have been directly affected by tuberculosis and who have been able to form a local NGO and are operating in Kinshasa. So, calling now Maxime Lunga to give his presentation, which will be in French, and Lana will help with the translation. Thank you, Maxime.
Merci pour la parole.
Thank you.
Donc, nous remercions les organisateurs pour cette opportunité.
Thank you, organizers, for this opportunity.
Qui nous permet d'échanger l'expérience de la RDC avec vous.
Which allows me to share the experience in the DR Congo with you all.
Donc, en fait, on va parler de la contribution des ex-patients tuberculés dans les soins de la tuberculose.
The presentation will be about the participation of ex-patients, ex-TB patients in the support to services and care in control of tuberculosis.
Et donc, là, nous voyons que la tuberculose est un problème au Congo et que dans l'ensemble, le Congo enregistre par année 92,151 cas et la ville de Kinshasa en elle seule prend 20% des charges.
DR Congo is one of the high burden countries and 20% of the cases on the whole country are in Kinshasa.
Alors, donc cela n'est pas seulement l'affaire du personnel de santé, donc la communauté doit être impliquée. Voilà pourquoi, vers les années 1998, il y a eu mise en place d'un groupe de tuberculés. Avec leur conscience, ils ont pu commencer à s'impliquer dans la lutte contre la tuberculose. Et en 99, en fait, ce groupe est devenu une association dénommée Club des Amis d'Amiens. Et dès l'année 2001, il y a eu l'extension par rapport aux résultats de ces centres qu'ils ont commencé à Nzombo pour l'étendre dans 30 autres centres de santé dans la ville de Kinshasa.
In 1998, an association of patients were born in Kinshasa in two health centers in Kinshasa. In 1999, this club has been formalized into Friends Club Damien. And since 2001, the activities of the club have been extended to the whole city. Actually, there are 30 what they call antennas in the city of Kinshasa, which means that they're present in 30 different health centers of Kinshasa. Mm-hmm. And in 2005, they've been in the CCM of the Global Fund. They've become a member of the CCM of the Global Fund of the country.
Et nous pensons peut-être que c'est aussi la première association représentative au niveau de CCM Global Fund.
It's one of the first associations represented on the CCM, the Global Fund.
Et la commission assurait l'accompagnement médico-psychosocial des malades sous traitement ainsi que d'éduquer et d'informer la population sur la tuberculose. Et comme objectif principal, c'est de contribuer à la réduction de l'incidence de la tuberculose et de la mortalité liée à la tuberculose dans le pays.
The mission of the association is ensuring psychosocial support to the sick, as well as informing the general population in Kinshasa about the tuberculosis. And the principal objective is the contribution to the reduction of the incidence of tuberculosis and the mortality related to tuberculosis in the country.
Il a des activités qu'il mène en deux volets. Le premier volet, c'est l'accompagnement médico-psychosocial, où ce sont des activités qui s'exercent au niveau des centres de santé. Et nous avons donc des visites à domicile que nous effectuons auprès des malades nécessités, donc qui ont des problèmes et qui ne savent pas arriver au centre de santé. Il faut les visiter pour savoir pourquoi ils ne viennent pas. Et il y a les orientations des cas suspects dans la communauté. Celui qui présente les symptômes de la tuberculose, nous sommes censés de l'orienter vers les centres de santé pour des soins appropriés donc de la tuberculose et récupérer les cas d'irréguliers et d'abandon pour continuer les traitements afin d'éviter l'interruption des traitements qui peut amener aux résistances de microbes. Et puis assurer les dots à domicile, c'est-à-dire administrer les traitements auprès des malades à domicile, mais cela pour des cas extrêmes. Cela veut dire que ce sont des cas qui sont soit gravataires et qui n'ont pas de famille, et nous sommes censés d'apporter notre aide afin que ces malades continuent les traitements, et puis les contrôles aussi, et les transports de crachats pour ceux qui ne savent pas arriver au centre de santé, afin l'assistance sociale pour des cas sociaux comme les élèves qui sont chassés de l'école, les mariages qui se disloquent et les familles qui se séparent. Nous sommes là pour réparer tous ces problèmes.
Of psychosocial support, their activities include IC, that is health education of each new patient or suspect, which takes 20 minutes, house visits, encouragement of referral of suspects for a sputum checkup, following up on defaulters at home, in extreme cases also providing support to patients at home with drug intake, reminding patients of the sputum checkups whenever necessary, transport of sputa for diagnosis, and social assistance in case of stigma.
Et pour le deuxième volet, nous avons la communication et la mobilisation sociale. Là, nous organisons ou nous menons des sensibilisations dans la communauté, des conférences, exposés, débats dans des écoles et églises, des journées culturelles dans des quartiers. Et nous organisons aussi la journée mondiale tuberculose par notre propre initiative, ainsi que des journées locales. Et pour bien passer les messages, nous avons des chansons sur la tuberculose qui est composée, et des poèmes, ainsi que la sonnette. Il y a même une chanson qui est intitulée « Hymne de tuberculé » qui est chantée dans les centres de santé par les malades avant la prise des médicaments chaque matin.
In terms of communication and social mobilization, the association has regular sensitization activities in the community. They're present at conferences and give talks on tuberculosis. They organize cultural days where they talk about the disease. They are present in churches at the mass, where they sensitize also the population of the, on the disease. And every morning, there, when there is drug intake for those who are okay to come to the health center to take drugs, there is a song that they've composed and they sing it together with patients.
Et donc, je disais que c'est une association, donc il y a une organisation. Nous avons, au niveau des structures, premièrement, une direction générale dont j'assume la présidence pour orienter les activités. Et puis, nous avons au niveau des sections pour bien circonscrire les antennes qui mènent les activités sur le terrain. Et puis, nous avons des antennes, en fait, le troisième niveau, dans les centres de santé pour essayer de réaliser ces activités auprès des malades sous traitement. Et pour implanter ces antennes dans des centres de santé, nous passons par la sélection des volontaires parmi les anciens et nouveaux tuberculés de ces centres de santé selon les critères préétablis. Et enfin, on fait la répartition des tâches ainsi que la responsabilité de l'espace. Donc, on est au centre de santé chaque matin pour l'éducation sanitaire, mais c'est par rotation des membres ainsi que les soirs dans la communauté pour faire des visites à domicile.
The club is structured, it has a direction, like main level, sections and antennas. The selection of volunteers is a pre-established process and they're selecting volunteers among old and new patients. And responsibilities given to each new member is in the morning in the health center, in the community, in the morning in the health center, and in the evening in the neighborhoods, which are split up according to each of the health centers.
Okay. Ça, c'est une illustration d'une aire de santé qui couvre tout un centre de santé de prise en charge du dépistage de la tuberculose et des traitements. Donc, les centres de santé est subdivisé par quatre, et nous avons dans chaque coin trois ou quatre membres qui font partie d'une sous-aire de santé, et donc ils sont censés, ces personnes-là qui sont dans un coin, de suivre les malades de ces côtés-là. Et c'est pour éviter des longues distances de visite à domicile, des longues distances d'encadrement. Et voilà comment est-ce que nous évoluons au niveau des aires de santé.
This is an example of how the work is organized. What you see is a catchment area of a health center in Kinshasa, which is afterwards split in four different neighborhoods. And the volunteers that you see on the pictures live in these areas in order to avoid long distances. So each of them, in each of the red squares, these persons are responsible for following up patients who live in the same area.
Et bon, ça c'est le centre de santé Molende. On va voir la contribution de ses amis dans les résultats des traitements et les dépistages de la tuberculose. Mais avant ça, nous voyons d'abord ce qu'il faut avoir comme socle pour soutenir ce travail. Donc, il faut qu'il y ait la formation des membres, il faut qu'il y ait la supervision et suivi et évaluation des activités du terrain, et des réunions hebdomadaires, ainsi qu'une motivation. Nous avons reçu des motivations du Programme national tuberculose ainsi que de la Fondation d'Amiens, qui nous a donné des vélos, des t-shirts, des pannes, etc. Mais pour aussi avoir des succès, il faut que l'infirmier s'implique totalement. Parce que sans l'implication de l'infirmier, rien ne peut se passer. Mais il y a aussi le problème de temps de ces acteurs volontaires de la tuberculose. Donc par semaine, chaque membre peut consacrer une heure de son temps. Les difficultés sont les manques d'appui matériel et financier jusqu'à aujourd'hui. Donc ce travail, on le fait parce que nous sommes nous-mêmes anciens malades tuberculés. On a peur de faire la maladie et voilà la première motivation. Mais il faut qu'il y ait l'appui matériel et financier. Et la faible implication des personnels de santé rend un peu fragile l'activité dans quelques centres de santé, ainsi que quelques volontaires qui conditionnent leur participation pour des raisons sociales.
So each new member of the association will be trained, supervised and evaluated.
They have weekly meetings and they have a good cooperation with partners in Kinshasa, such as Damien Foundation, which has donated t-shirts and bicycles for your work. And the success of the collaboration with health centers will also largely depend on the motivation of the staff, of the nurses at the health center, because without their involvement, it is not possible to have effective collaboration with the patients, because the nurse is the one who is in charge of ensuring support to patients as well.
Ici, nous voyons l'apport des amis que nous avons vus tout à l'heure dans la photo, dans l'évolution des taux de guérison des malades sous traitement. Et donc, vers les années 99, nous voyons que le taux de guérison était à 37%. Et avant ça, cela dit que c'était encore pire, parce que, au fait, les activités dans ces centres de santé Molende des anciens patients avaient commencé en 2000. Et donc, à partir de 2000, nous voyons la nette évolution des taux de guérison qui est passé de 69 à 92% en 2005.
This is the change in cure rate over time from 1999 to year 2000, and the patient association has been present in this health center since year 2000.
Et puis, nous avons voulu faire un peu un parallélisme avec la ville de Kinshasa, parce que j'avais dit tantôt que nous avons 30 antennes dans 30 centres de santé. Et donc, pour la ville, nous voyons aussi qu'il y a quand même une contribution, un effet d'entraînement des taux de guérison qui était à 65%, qui aujourd'hui se trouve à 86%.
This is the comparison with the cure rate with the whole of city of Kinshasa. The same thing in 1999, before their activities have started, has been in 65, while we can see in 2005 it's over 85%.
Eh bien, on a aussi contribué à la diminution des taux d'abandon, qui est très très important pour éviter la résistance aux médicaments. Et donc, pour le centre Molende, en 1999, il était à 7% d'abandon, mais en 2005, il est à 0%. Mais bien sûr, vers les années 2003, on voit un peu un rebond vers le haut, mais cela dit qu'il y avait le changement de l'infirmier à cette époque, et il y avait difficile à suivre les malades sur le terrain. Mais après, on a recru l'allure et nous sommes à 0%. Et la ville de Kinshasa également, qui est en bleu, y suit la même évolution.
Here we can see defaulting rates. Again, the green bar is one of the health centers, one of the first ones where they've been present, while the blue one is the whole city of Kinshasa, and we can see how the trend is going down with the implication of the patient association.
Et donc, en conclusion, nous disons que la participation des patients tuberculés dans les soins de la tuberculose a nettement amélioré les taux de détection des cas tuberculés et les résultats des traitements du centre de santé de Molende à Kinshasa. Donc, la participation de la communauté dans la lutte contre la tuberculose contribue à l'amélioration des soins de la tuberculose.
In conclusion, the participation of tuberculosis patients in tuberculosis care has improved the case detection and the treatment results and outcomes at the health center Molende in Kinshasa, and the community participation in the fight against tuberculosis improves the tuberculosis care in general.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Maxime. I'm now giving the floor to Mrs. Kathy Opoka, whom I would also like to introduce briefly. Mrs. Opoka is not. She's also not a healthcare worker. She used to be a teacher by profession, until starting, first of all, to give company and helping people affected by AIDS as a volunteer. Eventually decided to give up her profession and effectively became the leader of a local NGO that over the years, as you will see, has been taking care of very many people in northern Uganda. An impressive example of how the community goes beyond medical concept of assistance to move towards a concept of holistic care. Thank you, Kathy.
Good morning, all. I'm very happy to be here, and I thank the organizers for inviting me to come and share my experience of the community involvement in care and support to HIV/AIDS patients. An HIV/AIDS patient or a TB needs love, acceptance, and proper care so that he can not feel alone, and that is needed by everyone. So that this person can say he has encountered something beautiful that gives meaning to his life, because normally they lose hope, they take their sickness as a curse, and when we are very close to them, that is when they can die with dignity and happiness. What is Meeting Point? It's a local NGO composed of volunteers providing support and care to people infected and affected by HIV/AIDS. It was founded in 1990 in Kidum District, Northern Uganda, and was recognized in 1994 by the government or Uganda government. How did it begin? That is the history. In 1990, Meeting Point was founded by Eleonge, the principal of the District Farm Institute. Sick of AIDS, he found a friendship in a group of friends, Italian volunteers, and some African friends. His family was the first encountered and supported by the Meeting Point. In fact, the lady, the wife of Ellie, the child, all were suffering from HIV/AIDS. So the wife was a nurse in government hospital. She encountered some groups of friends who belonged to a Catholic movement called Christ Communion and Life. So she went home one day very excited, and she was asked by the husband, "What is wrong with you? Do you take alcohol in your meetings? Don't you know that we are suffering? And if people will know, they will abandon us." Because during those days, when you have AIDS, people will abandon you. They will try to run away from you, even if they are close relatives, because it was associated with immoral behaviors. And secondly, people did not know how one can get the infection. So Ellie, actually the wife, said, "Today I've realized that our suffering is not for nothing. It has got a meaning. Now we know where we are coming from and where we are going. So even if you died of AIDS or with other sickness, you still go back to God because we are from there." So that is our meeting point. We start from there and we go there. So starting from early, Meeting Point has always tried to give an answer to the desire of happiness. So even if you are sick, when you know where you are going, you will still be happy. So the people we met, or the sick people we met during those days, they were really happy and said even sickness with its terrible pains can bring happiness. So that one is myself with Rosemary, who refused to go home after being discharged from the hospital, because she said from home nobody would take care of her as the friends she has met. So this photo was taken in the evening. At 7:30 in the morning, she died. So you see that even if somebody is dying, he's still happy. And we have seen so many people dying, very happy. And normally people ask these friends of ours, "Why? What do these people bring to you?" And the only answer they could give them was, "Because these friends have love and care for me. There is nothing they bring like material things." So within the community in some areas in Kitgum District, after seeing the good work done by the volunteers, people in the community committed themselves to address and answer the problem of HIV/AIDS. So it was not only depending on us. Taking patients for treatment to the hospital, offering friendship, so every patient with AIDS still has a value, dignity, needs love, care, and happiness as any other person. So that is what was realized actually in the community, and people started taking care of it. So at the beginning, Meeting Point actually was the first organization in Kitgum District to provide voluntary support and care for people affected, infected and affected by HIV/AIDS. So the volunteers were offering their lunch, taking orphans in their houses, because by that time there was no support from any person. So you have to sacrifice your lunch, you don't eat, you put that money in the pool, and then you buy food and take to an HIV/AIDS patient you have encountered. And the children left behind, they were not taken care of, but we could take them into our houses and incorporate them in our families. Now, the aim of the organization, to accompany and value the people infected and affected by HIV/AIDS by following each person, patients with AIDS encountered, regardless of tribe or denomination, to ensure that none of the friends encountered will be left alone in facing the disease and all the problems related to it, rejected by the family and society. So the method of our work is living a friendship, a personal relationship with the HIV/AIDS patients. Help them to come up and make their own decisions, involvement of relatives, neighbors, and the community to support them. And the organizational structure, we have the foundation body with 7 members, executive body with 5 members, and we have 14 staffs and 49 volunteers. So these are the number of HIV/AIDS patients supported since 1990. So you see, from 1990, the total was 16, and then it grew up to 3,679, if you see how the number was always increasing. So from 1990, Meeting Point has grown not only in terms of number of HIV/AIDS patients, but also in the experience trying to make its presence more concrete and continuous. So you see the operational areas now within Kitgum District and Pader. The beneficiaries. HIV/AIDS beneficiaries, when you see the number, from 1990, we have a total of 3,466 who are still alive. And then we have World Food Program that is giving them nutritional support. They're actually giving to 1,200 patients. The orphans, vulnerable children we are supporting, this year was from nursery to the university. So those are the numbers of the children we are supporting, 447, and that is the level of their education. The donors for 2007, we have AFSCCRD, Distance Support Program for Orphans, Vulnerable Children. We have, that is for school fees and other needs. World Food Program for Nutrition Support, CRS for Antiretroviral Treatment, and then we have IRCU for home-based care, synthesization programs, supporting drama groups, and so on. So the partners within the Kitgum, we have St. Joseph Hospital, because we are not working alone, and Kitgum Government Hospital, health centers in Kitgum, and Pader, Kitgum District Director Office, and Health Services, that is the DDSS office. So all these, we work together because we are for that person and the health of the person. The activities we are doing is counseling and referral. That is why we are with the hospitals. HIV blood tests, antiretroviral treatment, and opportunistic infection, including TB. So patients are referred to health centers and St. Joseph Hospital in Kitgum, and Meeting Point takes care of the follow-up. So you see one of the social workers there who has gone home to visit this patient. Kitgum District TB and HIV. So that is the numbers, actually. You see that TB cases is in increase. In 2004, 583, 2005, 614, and then in 2006, 668. So in 2006, some of these TB clients were cancelled for HIV. And when you see there are only 250 were tested, and out of that 149 found HIV positive. So TB is one of the major opportunistic infection. In 2006, 60% of TB patients in Kitgum District were tested HIV positive. And in 2007, from April to September, 331 TB cases registered, 170 cancelled for HIV test, 133 tested, and 95 found HIV positive. So from April to September 2007, 71% of TB patients in Kitgum District were tested HIV positive. So we also carry out home visits. When you look at that, social worker is trying to feel the temperature of this lady who is sick so that she can be referred to the hospital. We do also home based care, going together with the doctors to give treatment to those who are bedridden and cannot go to the hospital now. We follow up clients on antiretroviral treatment together with the doctors. We also refer these clients to the religious ministers. You can see the priest giving the sacrament to that patient who is down. And then we distribute food. You can see the clients lining up to receive sugar in the Meeting Point compound. We also do non-food distribution. That is the nets, the water vessel, the water guard, to prevent opportunistic infection like malaria, diarrhea, and so on. We also encourage these patients to do income generating activity. So those are clients whose health has improved, and they are now doing, what is it? It is bakery group. So some people come to order the bread from them in case of maybe workshops and so on. Support to the orphans. These are orphans in the secondary school where we sometimes go to visit them and talk to the teachers to find out their performances and see how we can help them improve. We have activities like synthesization program, can be in the community with the patients with HIV/AIDS on how to use the water vessel, or give information on antiretroviral treatment, how to adhere to the treatment, and so on. So, synthesization program continues in the community. This is the group of patients with HIV/AIDS who are performing drama on the importance of antiretroviral treatment and adhering to it. Some activities we do to improve or to make our work go well is joint leaders meeting with local leaders, medical personnel, and Meeting Point counselors at community level. We have also coordination meetings with district health department partners and other stakeholders, that is at that district level, and then meetings with the patients with AIDS. There is also a strong working relationship with the clinical officers from Kitgum Government Hospital, Health Meeting Point Clinic for opportunistic infections treatment on a weekly basis. and then drugs for opportunistic infection are provided by the district director of health services. The meeting point counselors go to Kitgum Government Hospital, AIDS Clinic, on a weekly basis to counsel the patients. The district implements some activities through meeting points, that is home-based care, home visits, sexually transmitted infection synthesization programs. There is also monthly meeting on activities submitted to the DDSS office. So events during the year which involve the patients with HIV/AIDS. We had an event during the year that is launching a book called Irene's Eyes. Irene is the wife of Ellie, you saw in the first. So a book was written telling the whole world what happened at the very beginning. So that was the day. And then sad events, the flood that happened on the 18th, September 2007. I think you heard about the flood in Uganda. There was terrible rain and so on. So our office was affected. You see how the flood is now. We had to remove all the things and leave the place. But we have started going slowly now because the water has gone down. So that is where we were transferred, in a school, but we are still outside. We didn't know what to do with the flood. So in front of sickness and a disaster like this, man is completely paralyzed. So the answer of meeting point to the problem of life is a companionship present within the community, helping the people to face the reality in a positive way with happiness. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy. I'm now leaving to my co-chair the introduction of the next speakers.
The next presentation is about the work since 1999 of Partners in Health Peru, Socios en Salud, with NDR-TB and HIV patients. The first speaker is socioeconomic and psychoemotional support for NDR-TB management, identifying needs and monitoring support. The speaker is Ena Palacios, is coordinator of those plus project, and Julio Acha is coordinator of mental health program of Socios en Salud.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to share with you Socios en Salud's experience in Peru, providing socioeconomic and psychoemotional support for MDR-TB patients. First, we will refer briefly to Seth's model for MDR-TB care. Then, we will focus on the socioeconomic support component of the model, and then on the psychoemotional support component, with a special mention to the psychoemotional support groups, and finally some conclusion. Peru is a Latin America country situated in South America. Its population is about 29 million, of which 44% are poor. Approximately 3% of TB cases are MDR-TB. In 1996, Socios en Salud, in collaboration with a Peruvian national TB program, began treating a first group of MDR-TB patients with individualized treatment, setting the basis for what will be the first community-based model for MDR-TB management. It is community-based because care is provided in the patient home and the health center and together with the community. It is comprehensive because it addresses clinical issues, but also socioeconomic and psychoemotional problems. It is individualized because it's targeted to each patient's needs. This presentation focuses on the socioeconomic and psychoemotional components of the model. Socioeconomic determinants for TB are well known, mostly related to poverty. These are so many and the complex that they have rarely been tackled appropriately and sustainably enough, thus perpetuating the disease. In Peru, medical treatment for MDR-TB is free throughout the country, but little or no socioeconomic support is provided to patients, increasing the risk of abandoning treatment. Socios en Salud provides this support. Socioeconomic support is targeted on the patients but also to family contacts and the health promoter who are key for infection control and the patient recovery. Experience has shown us that medication is necessary but not enough. The socioeconomic support needed for patient recovery and adherence to treatment requires identifying each patient needs and providing support accordingly. Each member of the multiprofessional community-based DAT Plus team will intervene more or less in each of the three components of care. However, the nurse and the health promoter, especially trained in MDR-TB, are key in all three components since they are closer to the patient and the community. They we will conduct regular home visits to the patient to identify his or her needs, deliver care and monitor treatment and support in all three components. The social worker, together with the nurse, will lead and coordinate the effort relating socioeconomic support. Socioeconomic issues affecting MDR-TB patients are many and diverse, and Socios en Salud addresses each of them according to each patient's needs. If overcrowding is a problem and there is high risk of transmission. It may be necessary to build an additional room in the patient's house. If the patient has to move to another city to receive treatment, then Socios en Salud may rent a room or lodge the patient in a special home. Where patients coming from far away can stay for the 2 years of their treatment. All MDR-TB patients in individualized treatment, as well as health promoter, receive a monthly food basket. Socioeconomic support is required also for aspects of medical treatment, not recovery by the Ministry of Health, such as auxiliary diagnostic tests and consultation and drugs necessary to combat side effects. Patients receive medication in the morning in the health center and in the evening in their home, where they are administered by a health promoter. Sometimes transportation will need to be covered for the patient and or the promoter. We also provided support for income generation initiative and reinsertion into the workforce. Now, Dr. Acha will refer to the psycho-emotional support component of the model.
Whatever our role in the health team is, we should always remember that we work with people, not with illness or microbes. Each individual has a background which influences how he or she will react to diagnosis and face the disease. Once diagnosed, the person will need to learn to accept the disease and the treatment, side effects and limitations. But we also have to fight against social stigma. Socios en Salud nurses have identified several situations faced by MDR-TB patients for which emotional support is necessary and which you can see listed here. I would like to emphasize guilt, stigma, adherence, side effects, and socioeconomic difficulties, such as losing the job, failure to current or previous treatment, and proximity to death. When identifying needs and targeting support, we not only look at the psycho-emotional and psychiatric problems of the MDR-TB patient, but we also consider and provide support to the DATS Plus team. Their own mental health and ability to provide psycho-emotional support to the patient may be affected by particular situations relating to the disease, treatment, and the care they provide. During their illness, patients will go through each of the steps of the grief: denial, feeling of guilt, anger, depression, acceptance of disease. The most important step is guilt. Relationship with family, friends and others, as well as most aspects of the person's life, will be affected somehow by the disease and its treatment. The person will need support to handle these chains appropriately so that they don't negatively affect recovery and possible cure. It will be necessary also to evaluate and manage personality disorder and mental disorders which may be present prior to MDRTB treatment. The most frequent psychiatric disorder we find during that treatment are psychotic disorder and depressive disorder. We will also need to manage psychiatric disorder using side effects, using atypical antipsychotics, antidepressives such as SSRIs. In our first 75 patients, we observed that 52% had depressive symptoms when they started treatment, while only 20% had depressive symptoms during treatment. This patient received psychoemotional and socioeconomic support. Although none had psychotic symptoms at the beginning, 10% did have them during treatment, probably due to cyclosurine. This patient received atypical antipsychotics and continued their MDRTB treatment. Only 1% of the patients with psychotic symptoms required treatment in a psychiatric hospital. However, they only required a short stay. In order to timely and manage psychoemotional problems, we work closely with the patient, family, and Dots Plus team, especially with the mental health team, health promoters, nurses, psychiatrists, psychologists, and social workers. As in the rest of the components of the community-based model, the nurse and the health promoter play a key role. The healthcare personnel responsible for delivering training and the promoters who visit the patients daily are prepared to identify alarm symptoms as quickly, suggest emotional or psychiatric disorder, and to seek help accordingly. There are several ways in which Socios en Salud provides emotional support to MDR3 patients. Some are informal, like the daily visit accompanying the patients, and some others are more formal, psychoemotional support groups being the most important. These groups are conformed by 15 to 20 patients who meet every 2 weeks with a therapist and co-therapist during 2-hour session to share and discuss their worries and problems and support each other. Patients have to be culture negative to participate in this group. Psychotic patients are temporarily excluded. During these group sessions, the therapists and co-therapists will help eliminate guilt, stop looking for the contact, accept the disease, its temporary limitation and side effects, adapt to specific situations, MDRTB treatment, side effects, family problems. Don't forget, help them to eliminate the guilt. The guilt is the tuberculosis of the soul. In our experience, psychoemotional groups play an important role in helping patients accept and overcome their long and difficult treatment and contribute in reducing abandonment. They also allow interventions in case of suicide risk. Participation of cured patients sharing their testimonials and giving support to patients on treatment has proved very effective. All the details on how to prepare and conduct these support groups can be found in Socios en Salud manual available in Spanish. In this chart, the blue line represents abandonment rates in the MDR-TB patients receiving standardized treatment in Peru. The red line shows abandonment rates for individualized treatment. We can see abandonment rates are higher in standardized treatment, although both treatments are ambulatory, standardized treatment lacks the socioeconomic and psychoemotional support component and of individualized. This suggests that this support contributes to patient adherence to treatment. Finally, MDR-TB requires a long and difficult treatment. We must guarantee that patient will receive the pharmacological, economic, and psychological means they need to combat the disease. This is especially important in resource-limited settings, community-based comprehensive individualized care has proved successful in doing this. Thank you. Muchas gracias.
Thank you, Julio and Eda. The next speaker is linking NDR-TB and HIV prevention management through the community health worker. Maribel Muñoz, she is coordinator of Targa Plus project.
Thank you very much for the opportunity of sharing with the experience of Socios en Salud in Gorka together with Health Promoter for MDR-TB and HIV/AIDS Management in Peru. Phil, I will refer to how we started our community-based model involving health promoters. Then I will review the characteristics and roles of these promoters. Looking to the benefits that they have brought into MDR-TB and HIV/AIDS management, and finally share with you some of our challenges. In 1996, Socios en Salud was about an MDR-TB epidemic in the north of Lima. At that time, in according to international recommendation, resistant TB was not considered treatable in resource-limited countries because treatment was long, complicated, and very expensive. However, Socios en Salud managed to start individualized treatment for a first group of 10 patients. Little was known thing about resistant TB, and we opted for individualized regimen tailored each patient. This allow has to implement a rigorous monitoring system for timely detecting and treating the possible side effects to guarantee the patient will take their medication. To provide emotional and socioeconomic support to enhance adherence and to register in detail each patient's response to treatment while on ambulatory care. At that time, Socios en Salud already worked with and within the community together with promoters or community health agents. So it seemed natural that health promoters to involve in accompanying of this first patient unit daily on the long treatment. Additionally, Sami Lasaltin, PIH sister organization in Haiti, had successful involving a accompanator in the management of TB, but there was no similar experience with MDR-TB. Peru has other low-income countries in Latin America, has a long tradition of community organization in pursuit of collective strategies for overcoming problems deriving from poverty. This ability of poor community to organize themselves, to identify their own leaders, and a common target for common objectives was seen by the health sector in an opportunity to expand health service covering to community health agents or health promoters in prevention in the promotion activities. In Socios en Salud, this model, health promoters are involved also in MDR-TB treatment, delivering, and supervision, thus expanding their traditional role also toward patient care and recovery in a disease with characteristics more chronic than acute. The promoter is not just a complement or external support to the health team, but becomes a member of the team, but without losing his or her sense of belonging to the community. Since this first 10 promoters supported the first MDR-TB patient in North Lima, at one time there were up to 700 promoters delivering individualized treatments and reaching approximately 2,500 patients. At that date, MDR-TB treatment is provided throughout certain regions in Peru. Since year 2003, when the first cases of MDR-TB and HIV co-infection were detected, specialized MDR-TB promoters were training also in administering antiretrovirals and in education for lack of opportunity infection and side effects. The health promoter knows his or her community well, is a natural leader and is constantly seeking improvement for his or her community. Live near the patient who may or may not have previous experience working in health-related issues, but receiving in training on TB, MDR-TB, and HIV-AIDS to accompany the patient during the treatment process. An egalitarian relationship in providing between the promoter and the patient. Usually, the MDR-TB promoter is chosen by the health personnel from the health center where the patient is to be treated. In our space experience, promoters should not be family or relative of the patient. Each promoter should be responsible for not more than 3 patients. Promoters accompany the patient throughout the 18 to 24 months of MDR-TB treatment. During this time, and because HIV treatment is life-lasting, they will prepare the patient for self-administering antiretrovirals and for treatment guidelines. Identify and preparing a person from the family or someone chosen by the patient who will help him or her overcome the difficult moments of HIV-AIDS treatment once MDR-TB treatment has concluded and the promoter is no longer there. Among its main roles, promoters help promoters helping lifetime within the family, the neighborhood, and the community. they have a key role in translating the language and the oral codex culture of each group. During daily visits to the patient home and in coordination with the health center, the promoter not only directs and supervises treatment, but has the opportunity to observe physical and emotional changes in the patient, reporting and help implement appropriate measures. Because promoters are closer to the patient, they are in a privileged position to look into other issues aside from the biomedical, especially socioeconomic and psychoemotional. They participate in training and facilitator in workshops, targeted the promoters and also health professionals such as nurses. The health guard data conduct server and identify research problems and suggest hypothesis based on their experience of knowledge. Autista recurrent permanent monitoring and supervision by the field supervisor, usually nurse technicians, and the nurse responsible for MDR-TB management in each region. It is also necessary and important to look how the relationship between the promoter and the patient is going. Build a community-based infrastructure and working with health promoters in MDR-TB and HIV-AIDS. Management may demand external effort and the time during the initial phases of project implementation, but has many advantages. We have set up patient adherence to treatment is enhanced. Supervised comprehensive treatment is optimized. Contact tracing is facilitated and healthcare is external to TB or HIV. This chart shows abandonment to treatment in patients receiving standardized treatment, blue line, and patients on individualized treatment, red line. In Peru, clearly advancement is higher for standardized treatment. This is one of the main differences between, but treatment is that standardized treatment does not have promoter involvement in treatment delivery and follow-up. This is troubling. Suggests that promoters may play a positive role in adherence. In 2005, the Peruvian National HIV Program, with the help of Socios en Saludis, that plus team, managed to improve the long rate of enrollment of HIV patients into antiretroviral treatment. The blue line shows the enrollment rate without the intervention of health promoter, while the red line shows enrollment with involvement of health promoters. In the 9 months of the program, 124 patients per month were enrolled, while in the last 7 months, 226 patients per month were enrolled, increasing 30%. Some of our current challenges are to continue spending the community basic model with health promoters in Peru and other places, guarantee sustainability of promoter involvement, find strategies to help health professionals generally value the role of health promoters, determine when to end support from the promoter to HIV patients, find out how adapt the community-based model in places where there are not health promoters. Finally, I would like to end this presentation with the words of Carlos. One of the many MDR-TB patients that have been cured. Muchas gracias.
Thank you, Mayred. Any question for the opponents, please?
We'll have one more presentation, and then we'll have about half an hour for questions or perhaps your contributions.
Good morning. Many thanks for the opportunity being with you. And to share with you one more good, in our view, good experience addressing TB and HIV at the community level. I see that if we bring together all our strengths, just what was presented during this day, during this morning, so I think it's enormous forces to fight. First, to introduce myself, my name is Lasha Gogwadze. I represent the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies that brings together 185 national Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies worldwide. This is the biggest humanitarian organization. In our movement, we have International Committee of the Red Cross, International Federation of the Red Cross, headquarters based in Geneva, and main strength National Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies worldwide through their countrywide networks and tens of millions of volunteers. This triangle shows what is our approach generally in our programs. We address prevention, we address stigma and discrimination attached to both situations, and we are involved in care and support of people affected with HIV and TB. To give you some idea, where we are and what we really focus, I would like to present these three rings that shows our role that identified by the Red Cross, Red Crescent Societies in TB control. So we are community-based organizations. We are not medical organizations. We don't take responsibility of technical part of TB control in this case. So, of course, this responsibility stays with the health authorities and with WHO, with other technical partners. We see our role in the first and the third links, in prevention, in health education, in case finding, and, of course, in social care, psychological support, and nutritional support. Currently, we have activities, tuberculosis activities in the countries that are listed there. And I hope that in those countries that you presented, in Peru, in Uganda, in Congo, I hope that very soon our Red Cross societies will join you in your good work. I would like to share you one specific experience that's coming from Central Asia in Kazakhstan, where we implement tuberculosis and HIV/AIDS programs, and there is no secret that in many cases these programs nationally also goes parallel ways. So, and of course we had for many years TB program, HIV program, so last 2 years we tried to bring these activities together. Programs are supported by British Red Cross and AstraZeneca, and since 2004 we try to implement integrate TB and HIV activities. So I would like to share with you through whom we are implementing this program. These are Red Crescent, Kazakhstan Red Crescent family nurses, volunteer psychologists that provide DOT, so direct observation, combined with the social support. They do case finding. They, again, as mentioned before, they do trace defaulting. We try to organize the support groups. We do peer education. Also, just to give some ideas so, about other activities that link to HIV prevention, and because you know that in Central Asia, HIV incidence is very much linked to the intravenous drug use. So to address the HIV problem, it is impossible not to get involved in the problems related to the drug use, and particularly intravenous drug use. So we have syringe exchange offices, condom distribution, promotion, and voluntary counseling and testing. Society is involved in the legal support wherever is needed and possible, and also education and awareness. Targets in TB programs of Kazakhstan Red Cross are tuberculosis patients in post-hospital phase, multi-drug resistant TB patients, their family members, and entire communities. Here I listed, I wanted to share some achievements. I mean, currently they are involved in 7 sites, over 1,000 beneficiaries targeted so 67% in the project sites. This is not the national-wide statistics. And in our sites where the Red Crescent is involved, over 80% treatment success rates are reported. And default rate in the sites where the Red Crescent is involved is about 1.5. So, meaning, if we take 100 most vulnerable patients or clients in our activity, so we try to follow them regularly, daily basis, until they finish the treatment. Of course, we can't take responsibility to cover all needs. Therefore, every society, depending on the country specificities, they have their criteria on so who is included in our programs. These are basically the vulnerable, most vulnerable among vulnerable. So these are target groups in our HIV programs, youth, drug users, sex workers, militaries, long-distance drivers, labor migrants. So those who are at most risk for HIV transmission. So I mentioned that society's focus is the education, and we do that through our peer educators. And so here, society wants to share with you some achievements that they managed. They managed to have hundreds of peer educators from the different target groups, from sex workers, from intravenous drug users, of course, from people with HIV and AIDS. So without them, it would be impossible to have any success in the activities. So we tried now to bring all those for years parallel going activities together somehow. Yeah, and of course, due to preconditions that are presented there. So in the country, TB rate was going up. number of multi-drug resistant cases was going up. HIV cases was increasing. 77% of the HIV cases or main mode of transmission is intravenous drug use. TB is diagnosed in over 45% of HIV cases, and 60% of death among HIV affected is associated with TB. So, I mean, of course, it's more than enough reasons just to put those efforts together and to address TB and HIV issues in an integrated way. And the focus of the program was, of course, on the psychological assistance and prevention of tuberculosis among risk groups for HIV and among people living with HIV. Yeah, that are target groups of the project. Of course, certain needs assessment was done, and of course it included medical aspects that are listed there, so available services at the site level of different medical services, I mean access to antiretrovirus, different diagnostic services related to HIV or in general, or some preventive checkup. Needs assessment included, of course, social aspects, meaning availability of care and support services in the project sites. What is this? I'm sorry. Yes. Anyway. Yeah, and of course, a legal basis in our project sites. Whether confidentiality and anonymity was kept there, so what was the discrimination level of people affected with HIV, and of course whether it included access to the medical services and different allowances. That information was absolutely necessary to design the activities of the program. Society developed multidisciplinary team, I mean social worker, so caregiver, psychologist, and the legal advisor. Of course, the client was in the center. So, main achievements, again, in the project sites, the biggest achievement is that without those 28 social workers from the group of affected with HIV, so we would not manage to do anything. So we somehow managed, society somehow managed to increase the treatment completion rate and the success rate. I mean, completion rate went down from, default rate went down from 66 to 13% and success rate up to 66%. Of course, we are talking here about the small model in the country, and of course, one of the main objectives in the nearest future is just to expand. And so the staff and volunteer of the Red Cross Red Crescent regularly receive training, and we would like to see them tomorrow as a credible partners to the inside of the system of the human resources of the health ministry. And through our activities, we would like to advocate for the stronger voice of the communities and civil societies. So, and again, I would like that in the future we work in more and more countries together. And please, when you go back, please contact your National Red Cross or Red Crescent societies, because they can give you a huge help. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all the speakers, actually, for sticking to the time assigned. And we have now about half an hour, which we would be very pleased
to have questions from you, but also contributions from people who have been involved in the community initiatives. I would like to ask all those who wish to intervene to go to the mic, to the microphone at the back of the room, and please identify yourself and the country you are from, and tell us, please, also to which presenter you are addressing your question.
Good morning. I'm Ivan Anthony. I'm from Santa in South Africa. I have a general question to all the speakers. You were talking about volunteers. I would like to know, what is the definition of a volunteer? Is it a person that is getting paid for what he's doing? Or is it a person that is doing things free of charge? I think that is quite important for me to know. You see, because here, in this country where I am, we have a new concept of volunteers, whereas we pay people stipends and then still call them a volunteer. So I just want to know, what is the concept throughout all of the country or the world? Thanks.
Thank you for your question. I think I will try to answer this question, because this has been specifically one of the objectives of the WHO guidelines on community involvement, which are now being finalized. We have to consider, to answer your question, the reality of community participation after Almata, I think. Almata proposed figures like community health workers and traditional birth attendants that are trained by health professionals but are not health professionals. These are people who have been also called volunteers, but these are people who devote a significant part of their time, and sometimes their working time, to serve their communities. It is therefore right and obvious that these people perceive some compensation, perhaps not monetary compensation, but some compensation from their own community. But at the same time, we have seen today examples of personal support within the family, within the neighborhood, from friends, personal support that perhaps may be limited to 5 or 10 minutes a day, but which is very, very essential. So we don't think that people who provide 10 minutes of their time are less important, on the contrary, or people who do it as a more regular commitment and profession. Therefore, I think your question sheds some light on the fact that we should distinguish from voluntarism, doing things out of our own generosity, and voluntary work, which is a very important positive decision and assumption of responsibility by community members. Then this voluntary work may take short time, and obviously may not be remunerated, because people will do that happy to serve themselves, their families, and their community, or may take a significant amount of their time, and then it is absolutely right that as a part of the design of the community intervention, the community thinks about compensation for these people.
Hello, I'm from Botswana. I would like to know, how are we going to help the situation in the ground whereby the health workers seems not to where they look that the promoters are a threat to them? Is there any plan made that can integrate the two so that they can be on the same boat?
Thank you.
Thank you for your question. The question is about, if I got you well, health workers being motivated in involving communities and not perceiving the participation of the community almost as a threat to their profession. So I think, given that today's presentations were most about practical experiences, I think some of you may have significant things to report.
Voluntarios o agentes comunitarios están dentro de la comunidad y ellos van involucrándose dentro del trabajo a nivel comunitario, no solo con la tuberculosis, sino también con otras enfermedades, para poder ayudar a su a la comunidad, a las personas que están dentro de su ámbito.
So the community health workers or the health promoters are part of the community in which they're working. So they're not just working with tuberculosis, they're also working with all of the other social and health conditions within their communities. So because they're a part of those communities, they're very involved in all aspects of the people's work, of the work there. Does that answer your question? Do you want to know how they motivate them to be? How they get the community to work with them?
Now the question is clearing now. I think one of the major points about community involvement is precisely the fact of improving access. So the reality today is that it's not that we have too many health workers and too many promoters and too many community health workers. It's the opposite. So I think the way forward is for people to recognize their own role. Health professionals right now are seriously overburdened within health facilities, and it is good for them to concentrate on that work. We should not force them, we should not pretend that on the top of all what they have to do, they also move to the community. There are people who are from the community, who belong to the culture of the community, who know better everybody within the community. These are people with whom we need to establish a partnership. It's not a matter of jealousy here, because each one can contribute a different richness to the achievement of the common good I mentioned at the beginning of this morning, which is the health for everybody. So it's very important to recognize that different people can play different roles. And different people can have different kind of proximity and service rendered to the people who are suffering.
Uh,
I would not be very modest to say that even that very effective and very cost-effective and most efficient way to, on the groundwork is not, it cannot be effectively performed for free. It needs investment and it needs constant capacity building, and in my view it should be one of the major parts also financially in the national tuberculosis programs. They have to be well acknowledged, and so it has to be the part of it. As it is part of the 2016-2015 strategy, it should be well reflected in the national program. So it needs regular development and investment. It can't be free.
Thank you for this, and this is precisely why the point has been included in the strategy, with the hope of influencing governments in the new policy. We have another question.
My name is Dr. Gitau Kininjui from Kenya. I'm a regional coordinator for TB. I actually have two questions. One is just a follow-up on what we've been talking about, the stipends or something to motivate the supporters or promoters in Kenya, the community healthcare workers. So I just wanted maybe the previous presenters to tell us what motivations do they have for their healthcare, for their promoters and supporters to keep them on the job. 24 months following up one or two patients is not a small job. So I wanted to know, to have an idea of what stipends they offered. The second question is that we all think that as family members or friends, we have the interests of our friends at heart. So I was a little taken aback by the characteristics which were offered for healthcare worker, community healthcare worker or a promoter, when they excluded family and friends. I have read about these theories and I'm interested in community TB. I've done research myself. I have a different theory myself. So I wanted to see why are they excluding a family member and friends?
Okay, this question I think goes to and then also Maxime
goes to
would like to answer. But let's start first from the experience of the health communities.
Con respecto a la pregunta de la motivación del promotor, es una labor voluntaria que de alguna manera ellos dentro de su comunidad están trabajando, y la motivación más grande se podría decir que es por parte de ellos que van viendo en la labor que vienen desempeñando, el ver la mejora de un paciente, la sonrisa de un niño, la unión de una familia, el lograr curar a los pacientes con TBMDR.
So the first part of the question about motivating the community health worker to stay in the program is really because they're part of the community, and you know the smile of a child is a lot of what motivates the health worker there. Okay.
Es así también que reciben una canasta de víveres mensuales que les permite a ellos también continuar, que de alguna manera se ayudan en su comunidad. También transporte para la supervisión, la administración de dosis para las consultas que requiere el paciente. Con respecto a la pregunta, ¿por qué no una familia? La experiencia trabajar desde el año 96 con TBMDR, el tratamiento de TBMDR tiene muchas reacciones adversas, y es por donde el estado de los pacientes que en algún momento toman el tratamiento tiene muchos efectos adversos que generalmente la familia por proteger deja de administrarnos. Por pensar que están haciendo algo correcto, dejan de administrar el tratamiento y ponemos en riesgo a ellos.
So, also in terms of compensation, the health promoters do receive food baskets, monthly food baskets, and they receive compensation for transport for visiting the patients. In terms of the question about why we don't use family members for support system for DOT, it's because since 1996 we've had the experience with our patients that the adverse effects of the medications actually sometimes prevent family members from administering the medications. They see their family members suffering so much from these adverse effects that they stop administering the medications. And it's really for the patient's benefit that we ask that it not be a family member. It's to protect both the family member and the patient from being in a really terrible situation.
Sin embargo, el VIH lo que podemos ver es que se les enseña a autoadministrarse por el largo de 18 meses a 24 meses y en el camino vamos preparando a un soporte en la familia quien nos ayudará de alguna manera a hacer el rol de promotor más cercano por el resto de su vida.
In terms of our HIV work, because that's lifelong treatment, we actually are helping to train the patients themselves to do self-administration of the ARVs. And in that situation, we do have a family member help as be a support system for them in terms of reaching self-administration, achieving self-administration. So it's a little bit different in the HIV program. And that support system kicks in around 18 to 24 months.
Y los promotores de salud siguen vigilando, mirando, apoyando a su comunidad indirectamente, o sea, ya no con un monitoreo más cercano en las personas con VIH, pero sí vigilando y monitoreando a su comunidad.
And then, again, in the situation of HIV, the original health promoter does continue with follow-up with the patient. It's just not in as direct a way and as continuously, but they do continue follow-up every couple of months.
And now the contribution as well of Maxim Longa from the Patient Association in Kinshasa.
Merci. Je vous partage la motivation des ex-patients dans la lutte contre la tuberculose.
So about the motivation of ex-patients involved in tuberculosis.
C'est à trois niveaux différents. D'abord, c'est l'intérêt personnel, c'est l'autodéfense. Nous appelons ça, comme il y a un adage français qui dit qu'il veut la paix, prépare la guerre. Donc, tous ceux qui sont membres sont des anciens tuberculés, alors ils luttent pour qu'ils ne refassent plus la maladie. Donc, il faut aider ceux qui sont sous traitement pour arrêter la chaîne de transmission. Première motivation, c'est ça.
The first motivation is the personal interest in stopping the transmission of tuberculosis because these are the persons who have the experience already of the disease.
La deuxième motivation, c'est les résultats des camarades malades que nous accompagnons sous traitement. Comme ils guérissent beaucoup, ça nous fait une fierté et ça nous donne le courage de continuer à aider les autres.
The second motivation is the results that are being achieved with the involvement of the ex-patients because the ex-patients who help the new patients, they see them get better and this is very rewarding.
À ce niveau, mais il y a même des malades après la guérison de la maladie, au lieu de remercier l'infirmier, ils nous remercient nous. Donc c'est plus que de l'argent, ça.
And finally, lots of patients, as they get better and they keep get cured, they thank the health worker for helping them take their drugs, but they also help. They also thank the patient association, which is much more worth to them than the money that they could receive for their work.
Et la troisième motivation, c'est la considération et l'estime que nous avons envers ou auprès de nos infirmiers, médecins, traitants. Comme vous savez, la tuberculose est une maladie honteuse et les malades ont peur d'approcher les gens et les gens aussi ont peur d'approcher les malades. Mais déjà, quand les personnels de santé considèrent ce que nous faisons et ils nous estiment et nous font participer dans les réunions, dans les conférences, dans des prises de décision et nous contribuons avec nos idées, cela nous motive aussi pour dire que nous sommes importants et nous devons exister, nous devons continuer.
Tuberculosis is very stigmatized in DRC, and the fact that the old patients are getting recognition as persons, human beings, through their work, and they have a good relationship with the health staff, is very empowering for them.
Évidemment, il y a une dernière motivation qui est aussi importante, mais pas au premier rang comme j'ai cité les trois autres, c'est pour permettre la pérennisation de l'action de la contribution des espaces antibiotiques. Ce que j'avais dit dans ma présentation, c'est évidemment l'appui matériel et financier pour essayer d'étendre l'action et ainsi que de continuer à avoir les membres qui ont déjà, qui connaissent quelque chose et de continuer à le faire. Donc, c'est cet appui matériel qu'il faut ajouter à ces trois motivations précédentes.
Of course, none of this would be possible without the financial support of sub-partner agencies operating on the ground in Kinshasa, which are not financial incentives to individual volunteers, but are more things like bicycles, t-shirts, training, pen and paper to record their activities and so on.
Please. Yeah, we have time for one or two more questions.
I would like to express my concern about involving HIV-positive patients in TB care and ask if some have experience regarding it. As we know, it's probably a very dangerous activity if you're HIV positive to care for TB patients that particularly is sputum positive. So do you think, particularly at WHO, that we should recommend that they are excluded from this activity? And what about providing a specific package for those volunteers, like doing TST tests and proposing INF prophylaxis, even though it may not exist at a wide scale in the country. The other point is I'm really concerned by the fact that a lot of funding and activity are going specifically toward community-based organizations, and which is very good and very important and can complete the public health services activity. But I think we should really look carefully at what's going on in those public health services, because it may be a very good reason for them not to question themselves, not to tackle with their primary missions. It's true that they are often overburdened, but sometimes they just don't care. And if, as I've been said, for Kinshasa, it is the public, the volunteers who are teaching to the nurse to do his job, that's a very positive thing, but it's a bad sign for the health services. So I would like, I wonder why in Socios and South graph we see that when their cure rate, defaulting rate is remaining low, the non-supported sites are increasingly having high defaulting rate. You can have people not following their treatment because they know that they don't benefit from, you know, that support and basket of food. And then we just create discrepancies and some kind of more problems for the public services.
Question in several parts. So first, the reply from PIH.
I think it's best if we reply to part about failure. We don't have HIV patients treating as health promoters for our TB patients. So that's not something that we can necessarily answer. Perhaps some of our other colleagues can. But I'll ask about our failure rates as well.
I may take the time to reply the question to WHO. Well, obviously we don't have any recommendation about specific involvement of HIV people affected by HIV infection into volunteer work with TB patients. It may happen, but obviously in the context of our TB-HIV collaborative activities, we recommend regular screening for any symptomatic HIV-positive person, regular screening for TB. So I think this should be done even before the person becomes involved in any voluntary work. Very relevant in my view, the second part of your question, in which you ask, well, but are we not involving the community because the health services are not committed, in a way? And my answer, through many years of experience and also through the work in WHO and reviewing several countries, is that we should realize that community initiatives do not work if the health system is not functioning well. They simply do not work. Delegating to the community what the health system doesn't want or cannot do is not a solution. The involvement of community requires a more mature health system, not a less committed health system.
So, in order to save a little bit of time, I'm just going to say this in English. So, in terms of the NGO, is this on?
Yes.
Okay. In terms of the concern about NGOs either replacing or superseding the public health sector, that's exactly the opposite of what Socios en Salud does and has been doing for the last 10 years. We've been collaborating with the Ministry of Health. We have been increasing capacity at the Ministry of Health, and we've really been integrating the services that we're promoting with the Ministry of Health services. We're completely integrated with them. And
no, I'm not attacking you. My question is, don't you think that it may create some discrepancies? That is, some people will say, oh, those people, they are supported. I'm not attacking you, that we are not in the U.S., relax.
or in Iraq, for that matter, right.
But, no, it's just, you know, it can happen, it happens. Yes. Then people will say, oh, I don't have that disease, or I'm not supported by this program, so I'm going to drop my treatment. So that's my question. What do you think about that possibility?
You know, I don't, from our perspective, people don't fail treatment because they're not receiving the extra support of the NGO. We would love to give extra support to the entire population, and it's simply that we can't. And the Ministry of Health would love to as well, but they're not able to financially. They're not able to in terms of human resources. They're not able to logistically. So, and this is Jaime Bayona. He's our director of Socios en Salud, and has been working on this for the last 15 years, more than 10 years. So the standardized regimen from the Ministry of Health wasn't working. And that's why Socios en Salud stepped in and started doing the individualized regimen with the social and economic support.
What in the areas you can consider?
Right.
So people will feel lost without support. That's the question.
Yeah, I think that is a very valid comment and very valid situation, especially in my country, when at first we were facing with a very difficult public health threat, which was MDR-TB. And at first we were offered to receive a standardized treatment, and that's it. Just medicine and no more. And we were told that if you don't receive, this is going to be your last chance to receive treatment, and there is nothing more beyond that. So if you fail this treatment, that's it. So the patients that were receiving that treatment were not doing well, and there were no financial aid coming from the government or from international agency to do more. You know, it's not that money was not available. It's that the patients were not receiving the financial support that they needed at time. And the graph was showing data that happened around 2004. Right now, we are talking to a situation where the government moves the budget from $3 million to $10 million. So that means commitment from the government. And right now, you have not just meds, you have a food basket, you have covering lab tests for the patient, you are covering other activities, And some of them are coming from the government, others are coming from the international agencies. So what we actually were doing is that here there is a gap. What can we do to close the gap? So we were flagging that at some point of the history where we have two different treatments, one that didn't go well and the other one that was going well, the difference couldn't be just the treatment. You know, one wrong treatment and the other a good treatment. It must be something else. So there is no magic bullet on the medicine. It must be something else. Human factor helping the patient to cope with the treatment, 80-month treatment, 24-month treatment, must be something else. So food basket, bus fare transport, no fees for lab tests, etc., etc. And the government, knowing that it was working well, so they started taking responsibility and covering the budget. So that's what's going on now. And the budget coming from the international agencies are less, and the budget coming from the government right now is more. So this is still a process going on. Hope that helps to clarify your question.
Thank you for your reply. I'm sorry, because the debate is becoming interesting, but unfortunately we have to leave this room. So, impossible to summarize the number of important points and suggestions and provocations and challenges that have emerged. But at least we should take home one message. There is much more out there than we do imagine as health workers, as health professionals. There is much more in terms of ideas, initiatives, resources, commitment out there than we do imagine. So let today's meeting, and thank you for coming to an early morning session, let today's meeting be an encouragement to go beyond, to go forward, whatever our role, community members, health professionals, and so on, we can promote a dialogue with each other, and we can promote the involvement of people for a better empowerment for their health. Thank you very much, and have a good day.